Brian, I'm so happy you're on Freelance Gems. This is just such a blessing to get to talk to you in this way and learn more about what you do because we've been friends for a while, but I feel like whenever you say, "Oh, I do website strategy," I'm kind of like, "Oh," and then I'm like, I kind of don't know what Brian actually does, even though
Right.
I do a little bit of website strategy myself, but I think I do it in a very different way, less analytical way. So I'd love to just start off by having you tell the audience more about who you are and what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for having me. So, for sure. Hey, I'm Brian, and I do website strategy, whatever that is. And in particular, it maybe insiders refer to it as conversion rate optimization, which is a pretty nerdy phrase that if you haven't heard, you probably don't even want to parse. But the idea is it's a focus on taking visitors that are already coming to a site and asking, what can we do? What can we change to make a higher percentage of those do the thing we want, which might be to purchase something or to sign up or to download or to schedule a call. Whatever the point of the website is, you've already got an existing conversion rate, which is the percentage of people who come and then do the thing. And so it's a question of what can we do to make that number go up? And that's often focused on experimentation. So, like, I don't know how interesting it is to get into the details of what that entails and what it looks like and what it means. We can go there if you want. But the short version is switching up stuff on the site. You, as a visitor, don't know what's happening, but in the background, we're collecting data and we're able to say, oh, okay, well, this headline makes more people buy, or oh, this pop-up makes more people opt into the newsletter, stuff like that.
Awesome. Yeah, no, that's so cool to hear about because I feel like that breaks it down so much better than just website strategy because you're really in there working on the conversion rate. And that's arguably the most important part of a website, I feel like, is when that actual point of sale or whatever that next step you want the audience to take happens on your website. So, what kind of clients are you helping out with their optimization rate? Is it everyone that needs this kind of work, or do you find it's certain industries that really need this the most? Who are you working with?
Yeah, good question. I've been doing it for a long time and I've worked with a pretty broad variety. So when we talk about the experimentation, there's a bar you have to clear for that to make sense. You have to have a certain volume of traffic and conversions to be able to do the math that tells you what the answer is. And so that leaves out a lot of potential businesses. If you've only got, a dozen purchases happening a month or a dozen leads coming in per month, you don't want to bother with the experimentation. There's other stuff you could do, which we should probably get to if time permits, but just the A/B testing experimentation stuff, you really need a higher volume. And so e-commerce is a really good candidate. If you're doing e-commerce and you have more than a few hundred sales per month, should absolutely hire somebody like me to do this kind of stuff on your site. And then larger SaaS companies, either self-serve who have a bunch of customers or enterprise SaaS that just have a bunch of visitors are also a good fit. And then lastly, media sites. If you think about like what is a conversion on like BuzzFeed.com or something, right? It's not a purchase, it's not signing up for something. It's just reading more. It's just clicking to the next article. And they have a huge volume of that. And so on a media site, experimentation just looks like what can we change to keep people around, which gets a little dodgy, to be honest, but that's how they make money. That's what a conversion is. So I've worked with all three types of clients in that respect over the years. And the last couple of years focused more on SaaS, just out of a desire to get deeper into the business model and not just like tweak stuff on the site, but let's think about how this fits into the whole organization, the broader team, how customers are understood and whatnot. But it works all over the place.
Okay, yeah, no, that's so good to know because I was thinking, like, okay, how can I do optimization rates on my website? But I'm like, okay, I'm nowhere near 100 sales a month or anything. So for someone else like me or a freelancer, just an online service provider who our sales look quite different, it's not an e-commerce situation, it's not, thousands of people on the website every month. What kind of testing or tinkering can someone do from that place to improve their website strategy?
Yeah, good question. I want to try to answer it from a couple directions. And so first, just want to start what I want to bring to this conversation from the perspective of someone who's done all these experiments on all of these higher volume sites, tried all kinds of changes, seen the impact, measured it, et cetera. I want to bring, I guess, a bit of perspective on how you should think about changing stuff on your site, which doesn't matter if you have 10,000 or 10 leads coming in per month. And so let me start there with just kind of some prescriptive recommendations, maybe. And then we can also talk about stuff you can do that's maybe not an A/B test, but it is research or it is data gathering that'll help. But just to start, and if you heard all the stuff about A/B testing and your eyes kind of glazed over like this, this is relevant to everyone. There's definitely a hierarchy of kinds of changes that you can make on your site. There's stuff you can change that's going to have a pretty big impact, for better or for worse, right? We don't know, but it's definitely going to change how people behave on your site, what they do or don't do. And then there's stuff that you can change that, it's probably not going to make that big a difference. And so I kind of want to outline my perspective on that. And so especially as a freelancer service provider, you think about your site, the single biggest point of leverage you have, in my experience, is the offer itself. And so start thinking there, start thinking about that. Like, what is the thing you want people to do on your site? You can change that. And if you change that, that's the biggest change you can make. One way or the other, that's going to change the results you're getting. So for example, if it's now like contact me and somebody clicks contact me and it takes them to a page with a form, fill out the form, it goes to your email, you follow up and try to sell them services. Okay, that's the offer, right? Like that's a conversion for you right now. You could change that to be like book a discovery call. And so as a visitor to your site, like that's a very different offer. I have to think differently about, do I want to do that? It might be way better. It might be fewer conversions, but they're more qualified, but it's a change that's going to matter when you change the offer itself. And similarly, I know some service providers are really lead with their newsletter. They have the sense that they publish regularly and they think, my best customers, my best clients always come from my newsletter. And so I'm just going to push you into the newsletter on the website. I'm not going to push book a call or fill out a form, like just sign up for my newsletter or get lost. And so that's a very different offer from contact me or from book a call. So that's the place to start, right? Like just in thinking about what's possible is, what is your current offer? What might it look like to change that? And so you can't A/B test it. So you kind of just have to change it and see how it goes. But that's totally all right. I mean, it's better than never changing anything, right?
Yeah, yeah. And would you recommend sticking to just one kind of core offer or core action that you want people to take on your site?
Yeah, absolutely. So important. You nailed it for sure. Like, don't overload me. Don't make me think too hard. You got to think, you spend all this time perfecting your website and it's beautiful and you love it. And so much thought and care went into it. And on the other side of that, you've got people coming to your site and they're on mobile. They just tapped over from social. They're one little tap away from going back to this dopamine hit feed that they've got going, or they've got 8 tabs open and they're researching, but they're also distracted. You get where I'm going with this. So the simpler it is to come to the site and quickly say, okay, what is this? What do they want me to do? What's on offer here? And then go do it, the better. So yeah, having 2 or 3 competing offers just forces that mental effort onto your visitors and your prospective clients. And it's way better if you do it for them. Just decide. It could be scary, but just prioritize, just decide.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I don't know if this is really something that, you can decide for a business owner, but do you see kind of any pros and cons between having a offer or call to action that requires kind of a bigger commitment, like a discovery call, versus a low commitment, like a newsletter? Like, do you think is there one way people should be leaning where they're trying to like catch as many people as they can with a lower commitment call to action, or does it just depend on the offer?
For sure, it depends, but I think maybe we can say something helpful, I guess, about how to think about that or how to decide And I think the important thing to highlight is either one is going to take realistically probably like months before you actually know, how is this working? How is this going? If you want to switch your focus to the newsletter and try to just get everyone to opt in, and that's a pretty low commitment, doesn't take a lot, then you're going to have to get people to the site, get them into the newsletter, send the newsletters, and also try to upsell people into a consult or a call or just a reply conversation from the newsletter. And it's going to take months before you know, okay, is this happening? Am I getting clients from this? Is this working? So if you're ready to make that commitment and you're committed to the newsletter, actually, I would say that answers it. You got to go try that. If you're going to do the newsletter anyway, why not try that? And if you don't desperately need a client tomorrow as well, if you can spare that time, probably worth it. On the other hand, just having a discovery call, for example, be your offer, well, that you're going to have a pretty low conversion rate from that, no matter what, no matter how people are getting to the site or what their expectations are. You know, we're talking a couple or few out of every 100 visitors, most likely, will opt for that.
Yeah.
And then you have to have even more time to say, well, out of the ones I'm getting, are they qualified? Are they converting to clients? And so maybe reframing the question is not just which one's better, but like, which one do you have the appetite to try first, given that it's a commitment of that kind of duration? I don't know if that helps, but maybe that's how I'd been thinking about it.
No, absolutely. I mean, that's the best answer I can think of, because I do think it probably does depend on a lot of factors. But when you say wait some months to see if it's working, do you have like a timeline you could give someone? Like, okay, if you make a big change like this on your website, wait 2 months or 3 months or 6 months. What kind of timeline do you think people should be looking at?
Yeah, it's kind of a made up number, to be honest, but I think 2 or 3 months. I would say you really don't know anything in less than a month. And so 2 months maybe is a good point to reevaluate. And my thinking is, if 3 months go by and you still don't really have a clue, something else is wrong. Or maybe you just need to make a decision, I guess. So 2 to 3 months, I would say, is a good range. Again, like nothing shorter, really, because it's a real danger. And even bigger clients with higher volume fall into this all the time, where there's noise in your data. In fact, your data is mostly noise. And so it's very tempting and dangerous to just see one little conversion, one little lead comes in and you just assume, oh, well, it worked, I did it, this wins. And you need a bit of time to temper that and determine whether it was just a fluke, just a random occurrence. This stuff is really hard. So yeah, I'd say give yourself a couple few months to make a decision.
Okay, yeah. And can you expand more on what noise in the data looks like?
Yeah, for sure. So here's one way to think about it. If you say, okay, let's say you have a coin from, you know, back in the day when coins were a thing, and you flip a coin and it comes up heads or tails. We all know that 50% of the time it's going to be heads, 50% of the time it's going to be tails in aggregate, on average, over the course of a bunch of coin flips. But if you take it out and flip it 3 times, you might get heads, heads, heads. Like, that happens, right? That's just due to random chance. Random chance isn't heads, tails, heads, tails, heads, tails in that order every time. Mm-hmm. Things happen out of order, and there's variance in the results you get. And so similarly, when you think about people coming to your site and taking an action, it's not like, let's say you get 3 out of every 100 visitors book a discovery call on average. You look back at your data, that's what you saw. That's not an atypical result. That doesn't mean that 97 people come and leave, and then 3 people book, and then 97 people come and leave, and then 3 people book. It's kind of scattered around like that. You might have weeks go by with nobody, and then get 4 or 5 in a single week. And so that's what I mean by noise, is just the variability or the unpredictability of how these events happen, how these conversions come in, when. And so you could go switch something tomorrow and they get a conversion right away. And I guess the point is, that didn't happen because of what you switched. It was going to happen anyway. But if you read into it, then you're kind of fooling yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see that, because sometimes all of a sudden I'll be like, oh my gosh, so many sales this week. And then I'll just start thinking like, okay, this is like the new pattern or whatever. But it really does. I mean, I don't know if there is ever a way to fully know why what the rhyme or reason is behind that. Because sometimes maybe it's the season, time of the year, or maybe it's something you did on your other marketing channels, but it's hard to always directly tie that back. So that's really smart to wait at least 2 to 3 months. So that way you don't like change your contact form and then get a sale the next day and you're like, oh my God, I found the secret, because it could be, probably is totally unrelated. And then when you are going into your analytics, I don't know if this is in your wheelhouse to talk about things outside of just your kind of conversion rate analytics, but if you can add any input on what people really should be paying attention to in there, that mm-hmm. would be super helpful.
Yeah, for sure. Let me try again to give sort of the, here's the most important thing, and then maybe we can go deeper if it's worth it. But I would say the main benefit of having analytics, in addition to hopefully you can sort of tie some numbers to the performance of your business in a way that's useful, that it's giving you a peek into your visitor's experience, kind of not exactly who they are, but you can almost form an impression. And so I would go in and the first thing I would look at is device type, as in like mobile or desktop, just that. We tend to design and update our websites from a laptop or a desktop computer, and we look at it in that format. And it's pretty common to find that almost everyone who comes to the site is on a mobile phone. And so if your mobile experience is an afterthought, you're letting everyone down. So I would start from there, just to have that in my head, to realize, okay, most people are coming on mobile, so I need to think about what that looks like. The next time I'm updating my site or adding something, I need to be focusing on the mobile. And then the next thing I'd look at is where they're coming from. So that would probably be channel or channel grouping, depends on your platform, but just literally, are people coming from Instagram? Are they coming in via organic search? And also, what page are most people landing on? So with those three questions answered, you almost got a little story now about, you know, someone's on my site, how should I be thinking of their situation? And the answer is, well, they came from Instagram, they're on a mobile device, and they landed on this page. Now I know right where to focus, right? Like, where's the opportunity? What if anything needs improvement on this page versus looking at the whole site on my nice big widescreen desktop monitor, which isn't really relevant. So if that makes sense, I'd start there, like start with the stuff that kind of tells you more about your visitor's experience and helps you put yourself in their shoes.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. That's great advice, because I've seen so many websites, even for big companies, that when you go on their mobile site, it's just crazy over there. And I mean, I get it, because I'm a web developer too. And whenever I do mobile, I kind of, you know, it's a struggle, but you have to do it, because it's just, it didn't used to be such a big percentage, but nowadays, I think on my website, it's like half. So mm-hmm. it's not totally mobile, but it's a 50%. So it absolutely has to be, you know, easy to use, not all crazy looking. Sometimes you can't even like reach people's buttons on mobile because of just development issues. But mm-hmm. ideally, if you are a freelancer who doesn't do web development, you're just using like a template. So you should be okay on mobile. Nothing should be too crazy over there, but it's still good to think about, what is that user experience looking like over there? Because it's going to be different. And I think that's where simplicity really comes in. Because on desktop, right. It feels like, yeah, it's important, but like, you know, at least they have like this big screen to look at, and it's less kind of like condensed and overwhelming. But on mobile, that's when you realize, okay, user experience needs to come first, and it needs to be easy to get people where you want them to go. So
yeah,
that's really
helpful. To your point earlier about having one primary central offer on the site instead of just kind of, you know, everything, you know, sign up for my newsletter, book a call, contact me, all the more important on mobile. Because, you know, technically you could get away with cramming all those buttons with equal size and prominence on your desktop site. I guess it's a lousy experience, but you could do it. They're not going to fit on mobile, so you really got to choose.
Yeah, absolutely. And on that note, what other little user experience tweaks would you recommend making beyond just condensing to one offer? Do you see like crazy things in people's headers or navigations, or where do you see those little user experience mistakes happening?
Yeah, great question. Glad you asked. I think if we work backwards from a conversion, that's a helpful way to, again, prioritize where we should be focused. And so most conversions involve filling out a form right? You're booking a call or you're submitting your email and a request or whatever. And so let's start with talking about forms. Couple things to keep in mind are, as a general rule, the fewer form fields you have, the more people will fill it out. There are sometimes some exceptions to that, but in general, if you think about it, it just makes sense. If you need me to fill out 8 different boxes, that takes longer, I don't want to do it, maybe I'll just close the tab. And so think about, I guess the guideline here is, do you really need this information? Do you really need this information now? Or is there another way to get it? And so just ask for what you need. So of course you need my email if I'm reaching out to you and asking about your services, because you got to get back to me. And you probably need some context around, you know, what I'm asking, although maybe not. Like maybe I'm filling out a form on a page that's focused on an offer. And so you can just derive that and you don't have to ask. So reducing form fields is a good tip wherever you can. Make it super simple to reach out or to take that action. And then around the form, it's a good practice to just kind of remind people why they're filling it out. Like if they clicked a button and they landed on a page with a form, make sure that it says, you know, fill this out and I'll get back to you with your, to schedule your discovery call, or just answer a few quick questions and I'll send over your personalized quote. Just a reminder of what they're getting in exchange for the effort that they put into filling out the form.
Right.
And that too, be sure that it's clear what will happen next. So don't just have a contact me and then there's a form and the button says submit. And I'm sitting here like, well, what are you going to do with this? Where's this going to go? Are you going to call me? Are you going to email me? So be really clear about, again, reminding them why they're doing it and explaining what's going to happen afterwards. So that's all just form stuff, but the form is super important.
Yeah, absolutely. And
potentially the only other thing that we really need to get that conversion is they need a way to reach the form, right? We're working backwards, right? So from the form to, you know, how they get there, just needs to be probably a clear action-oriented button. So if you have buttons on your site, they should have a verb inside them. And the more they actually explain what's going to happen when you click the button, the better. So if it's book a discovery call, that's great. I know exactly that you're going to take me to a place to book a discovery call, versus, you know, find out about it or something like that. It's a little vague. It's action oriented, but could be better. So yeah, think about the actions, exciting, enticing, action oriented language in your buttons, make your form easy. That's probably the 80-20 UX improvements that everyone should take a minute and just go see, is there an opportunity on my site?
Yeah. I'm definitely going to do that after this call, because I feel like sometimes I have the tendency to pull out like the learn more buttons. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they have a place, but they also are used a ton. So,
yeah.
You know, more specific you can be, definitely the better. But that's really nice to hear, because sometimes I feel like when you hear about this new field that you should be paying attention to, like website strategy, you start thinking, oh God, like, is this going to take hours of my time? Like, is this something that's going to be super confusing? But when you break it down like that, it's literally just look at your forms, your form page, and then your buttons. So I feel like that's something everyone can do. So that's very helpful for someone just totally brand new to that world of website strategy, because even I am learning a ton, whereas I feel like I've been looking at website strategy in a totally different lens, but this is so much easier to break it down this way. Like, okay, we just want to make it easy for people, and these are like the 3 things we can do. So
yeah,
thank you for all the advice.
No, for sure. And to be clear, there, of course, there's more, and I'm not saying nothing else matters. I guess higher traffic website is going to be trying all kinds of stuff. They're going to be reorganizing their navigation and trying to figure out which orientation or style or structure is going to get more people deeper into the site. They're going to be changing out headlines to try to see which copy really resonates and moves people, and all that stuff is valid. And we probably all have the opportunity to change those elements on our sites too. It's just a question of prioritization. It's just a question of, yeah, but you have other stuff to do too. So how much time and energy are you going to put into this? And yeah, just making sure that like the happy path for like land on the site, understand what's on offer clearly, feel motivated to do it, and then go do it. Just to make sure that's as seamless as possible is the main thing that's worth your focus.
Yeah, Absolutely. And especially when you don't have those huge traffic numbers like your clients most likely do, that is good to know. There's kind of different tiers to thinking about website strategy. And of course, you know, you could dink around and still change those things with a smaller audience, but I suppose it would just be hard to really even see the effect at that scale. Is that right?
Yeah, it's not to say none of that is worth improving or seeking to improve, but yeah, you absolutely don't get the certainty that comes from, okay, this winner increased conversions by 7% with 95% statistical significance. It's not going to happen, right? We don't get that type of result here. We should still be doing it. And if it makes sense, I'll throw out a couple suggestions for how to approach that, how to go about that. So you're not completely just making stuff up. Probably the best source of insight for what resonates is your current clients. And maybe the sooner after they become a client, the better. So if you don't already have some sort of an onboarding process where you're trying to get a little bit of information that's useful for future marketing, then that's something pretty easy to tack on to your process. When you kick off with a new client, I think the best question you can ask is, was there anything that caused you to hesitate before reaching out? And if so, what was it? And this is always a really illuminating answer that you'll get. And whatever you hear from them, whatever it is, just take that and, you know, thank them for it. And then go back to your website and think, could I have addressed that on the site? And you usually can. So if they're like, well, I just wasn't sure if I could afford your services. Very reasonable. And you go back and look at the site and you're like, wow, I don't address that at all, but I could. Whether you want to just add pricing, which I'm a fan of, or at least talk about how you price, or provide examples of the clients you've worked with so they can place themselves in a budgetary something, right? To solve that problem for future customers. That's probably the biggest move. And now that's data-driven. It's not statistically driven, but you're using data from your clients. So that's where I would start.
Okay. So let's hear a little bit more about how people can actually get into the field from a freelancing perspective. And I think I'd love to start just by hearing about your own journey and how you got into website strategy, if you're comfortable sharing.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I'll share my story, and it's all quite random, I think. And I think that's fine. And so if you're in a different random place, that is probably fine too. So if we go back in time a little ways, I was a math teacher. I taught math at community college, and I have a math degree. You don't need a math degree, but I happen to have one. And then I got a computer science degree, which you also don't need, and got a job coding. And my first job coding was as a front-end developer for a conversion optimization agency, which was literally just a job I fell into. I didn't even know what it was. And so I spent years just building A/B tests, just writing JavaScript that we put into a little testing tool that we ran tests for clients. And that was my day-to-day for a while, until I got interested in sort of, where are these test concepts coming from? Why do we test one thing versus another? And so I moved into a strategy role from there. And so that's something I basically learned a lot of stuff on the job, because there's a bunch of skills that go into this, and you don't need to be an expert in really any of them, but you need to know a little bit about UX, or maybe more than a little bit. You need to know about consumer psychology and how people make decisions around buying. You need to know a little bit about front-end web design, and possibly like a little bit about how websites work. You don't have to be a coder, but it helps to understand how like snippets and tags work on a website and what can go wrong with them. Mm-hmm. You need to be comfortable with some statistical analysis. Again, not an expert, but understand the difference between a random result and a statistically significant result and why we care, all that stuff. And so I happen to come with, you know, about half of that sort of already in my brain, and the rest I picked up along the way. And that was enough. So I think, honestly, it feels like a cheat to say job at an agency is the way to learn, but it was a great way to learn, because there's a bunch of smart people there. There were people who knew all the stuff I didn't know yet, and also got to work on a number of different client projects. So I would say really any marketing agency that touches the website has the potential to offer this kind of service. A lot of them, maybe they say they do, like they'll say, we do CRO on our website. And you look and there's really no one dedicated to it. but it's like they're prepared to upsell it if a client asks. And so that's an environment where you can definitely learn everything you need to know to do this. I guess I would also say, if anyone's listening and is interested in this field, like, just get in touch with me and we can talk more, because I would love to help out as well.
Yeah. And on that note, what are you working on these days, and how can people connect with you and learn more from you about website strategy?
Yeah. Well, two things, which it goes against the advice that there needs to be just one. So let me lead with the primary, and the other one's just a fallback. So the big offer on the head, you know, the head of the website here is I've put together a web strategy community, and it's free to join. And so I'd love to have you come, just pop in there. And that's a place where you can come and ask questions and whatnot. And I've also put together a free, completely free landing page audit course. It's a micro course. It doesn't take very long. The lessons are like 3 to 5 minutes, and that's in the community. So if you have questions, you can ask them right there, and I'll pop in and help. And so some of the stuff we talked about today, like the prioritization and where to look in your analytics and starting with the offer, that stuff is actually covered in more detail in the course. And so I would say that's the action. If you're interested in this, or if you just think that your own website could use some help, come see me there. And I'm in there every day, and that's where I'd like to meet and interact and help out. And the other thing I'd say is you can always find me on Twitter if for some reason that doesn't work for you. So at Brian David Hall on Twitter as a backup option. But yeah, come take the free landing page course and see if it helps you make some improvements and gain a little confidence about your website. Like, I would like to help everybody out there reach the point where they're like, it's good enough, versus feeling like, oh, I know it needs to be improved. Oh, I know there's some stuff wrong with it. I'd like to help you get past that. So that's what the course is about.
Yeah. And that's such an asset, being totally free too. I mean, how often do you get that kind of offer? So definitely recommend everyone heading over there. I'm in the community as well, and it's super fun to learn about website strategy. Even as a web designer and someone who dabbles in it myself, I'm learning a ton. So Brian is just a wealth of knowledge. And then you also are coming out with a book, right? Or
yes.
Is that okay to talk about yet?
Yeah, absolutely. So the book With Any Luck comes out in October of 2022. I think these projects have a way of going sideways, but so far we're on track. And yeah, the book is called Your Website Sucks, Here's How to Fix It. And the idea is to take all the stuff I've learned from all these experiments and years of doing strategy and try to condense it down into, here's the stuff that you should care about. And here's some really straightforward suggestions for what needs fixing and how to fix it. If you don't have this huge volume and you can't hire an agency and run a bunch of experiments. So it should be very acceptable for a general audience. I try to write it in really plain language. I used to teach kindergarten. I like to think that helps. So yeah, coming October 2022, Your Website Sucks, Here's How to Fix It, available on Amazon. Grab you a copy. But in the meantime, come take the landing page course, and I'll make sure you know when the book's out.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time today, Brian. This has been so fun exploring the world of website strategy with you. And yeah, I'm so glad you've gotten to come on. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.